Hello. Ah, now that I've got your attention, I'd like a quick word about how Cambridge 105 Radio is funded. Our job is to give a voice to those groups who may not otherwise be heard. That may be our support for local music or the charity of the month. You're wanting to know how you can help, aren't you? Well, you can support our advertisers. And when you use their services, say you heard about them on Cambridge 105 Radio. And you can make a donation. It all goes towards our upkeep. We're eco-friendly, but we do have a bit of an electricity bill. Visit cambridge105.co.uk and click on the donate button. And thank you for listening.
On February the 6th, 1918, the UK Parliament passed the Representation of the People Act, which reformed voting rights and gave women over the age of 30 the right to vote for the first time. In honour of the anniversary, Royal Mail has issued a set of special commemorative stamps to celebrate the achievement of the suffragette movement. Cambridge 105 Radio's Susie Thorpe has been speaking to the journalist and historian Anita Arnand, who took it upon herself to tell the lost story of suffragette and Indian princess Sophia Singh. And Natasha Avor from Royal Mail, she's been explaining the significance of the stamps. Here's Susie.
These women's acts in the early part of the 20th century and their prominence in the campaign for women's rights to vote were described as lunacy and militant. Now, women were called lunatic through deed as opposed to desire, especially after Emily Davis died at the Epsom races in 1913. And it is understood now that she was trying to attach a vote for women's scarf to the king's horse. Now, the word lunacy lingers on. But does that sometimes get in the way, or is it part of the struggle to keep women in the political agenda?
I mean, it was what they tried at the time. There was a former police commissioner who actually lobbied to have any woman who was charged with a political offence sent straight to a lunatic asylum rather than to a prison. His name slips my mind, but I don't mind that because I quite like remembering the women on this day rather than the men who thwarted them. And they faced a lot. They faced that and a lot more. I mean, they faced physical violence on the streets. Police charged at them with horses and threw them against walls and against the ground. They were sexually assaulted by the police. I mean, I've got boxes and boxes of testimony I've waded through of the most horrendous stories from Black Friday in 1910, when women had got as close to getting the vote as they ever had. Asquith pulls the rug out from under their feet. And these women say, no, we're not having this. We're going to march on Westminster and make him explain himself. And right at the front, Emmeline Pankhurst and a suffragette I'm very, very close to, Sophia Dileep Singh, who's an Indian princess who's made the suffragette cause her cause. And they march on Parliament and they are met with the most obscene violence that day. They had to overcome an awful lot, but they were prepared to do it. They were prepared to die for the cause. I mean, Emily Wilding Davidson, you're right, we don't know what her motives were. The thought process now is that she didn't mean to kill herself because she had a return ticket. But there were women who were prepared to do it, and they could have died. They went on hunger strike in prison because they said, we are political prisoners, we're not common criminals, but they were treated like common criminals. They would drive themselves to the point of death until they were allowed out. Then the authorities were sick of this because it was making a mockery of the state, so they decided to force feed them. So women were pinned down to chairs by up to six warders and pipes shoved down their throats and into their stomachs, and this horrible white cloying liquid was poured into their gullets until, you know, they felt like they were drowning. And if they threw up, it happened again. But women said they were willing to do this. They were willing to be broken and also to break things because it brought attention to the suffragette cause. And so, you know, the militancy just got worse. Some people would now, I think, call blowing stuff up acts of terror. But they never targeted people. They only targeted things. And they said, you know, Emmeline was very famous to say, the argument of broken glass is more eloquent sometimes than words.
For Sophia Dileep Singh, who was born in London in 1876 and an Indian princess, as you say, what sacrifices does she have to make to become such an important part of the women's movement? Why has so little been written about the Indian women's suffragette movement?
Yeah, it was easy for her to become a part of the women's movement because they welcomed everybody. You know, this was a place where the sisterhood was more important than who you are or where you came from. So, you know, in their gatherings, rich mink coats would rub up against darned and tattered dresses of mill workers. They were all fighting for the same thing, but it was very hard for her to go back to her life. You know, the friends that she had, the ones who'd wanted to open their doors to her, slam them now. She was an enemy of the state, where once she'd been a darling of the state. I think one newspaper called her a thoroughly English gal, notwithstanding her great Oriental name. And suddenly, when she joins the suffragettes, they talk about her as, you know, a dirty immigrant, an ingrate, you know, somebody who the Hampton Court harried, and it all changes. And she becomes an enemy. And she does all that, you know. I always think that people who have nothing, you can understand why they fight. But people who have everything and who are willing to put it all on the line to fight, I think they're extraordinary.
I'm not sure a lot of people still recognise that there were two movements, the suffragettes and the suffragists. Do you think more should be done in schools to promote these two movements?
Gosh, absolutely. This is part of our history. We are terrible at writing women's history. We are awful at it. And there are some of the most extraordinary characters in history to remember here. So I would like, you know, the suffragettes and the suffragists to be taught much better in school. I'm grateful to Royal Mail for bringing out these stamps because, you know, they cover not just individuals, and there are individuals whose names you won't have heard of before, but group tableaus of women whose names we don't know, but they just represent, you know, the vast social, economic array of people who got behind this cause. And for that, I'm grateful.
Natasha, what was the hardest part to achieve this campaign? Were you surprised by the reception given to have these commemorative stamps of the women's movement, as opposed to your fantastic campaigns of Star Wars and David Bowie?
From what I understand, no, it wasn't very hard to push for this. I think what we wanted to do was to focus on some of the lesser known individuals. You know, there was no objection to this stamp issue. We wanted to bring to the fore the names of, you know, previously unknown members of the movement. Mary Lee, who was imprisoned three times. She features on one of the stamps, along with another sister suffragette, who is Edith New. They were imprisoned in Holloway, and their crime was throwing stones at 10 Downing Street windows and breaking them. So they are shown, you know, fist pumping, happy to be free, but, you know, the publicity that they've generated for the cause. And that was one of the things as well, for that era, photography was just being used to accompany the written word in terms of news. So some of these images that we've used were the very first, you know, sort of press photography that was around at the time. So we undertook some detailed picture library research and worked with the Museum of London to unearth some of the images that they have in their archives to feature on the stamps. And they, you know, the images feature big set pieces, mass demonstrations to the lone figure of Sophia Juleep Singh standing outside Hampton Court Palace on her own. So it's been an interesting one to work on, I can definitely say that.
How important, Natasha, do you think is it now that we've revealed these women on these stamps? I mean, what would be the next way forward to highlight these women who were literally written out of history? And it's only at this moment we are able to see this part of the history.
I think what will happen, I think, and it's something that Anita has mentioned, is that in her research she has found people who have had stories hidden in their attics, in boxes in the attics that they didn't know existed. So I think it's maybe you know, to help uncover some of the other stories, some of the other unsung, unknown heroines, that are out there, George. To find, you know, for us to maybe look at our own history, our own family histories, to find possibly some of those women who we didn't know about and didn't know what they've done. So I think it's, you know, I think it's important for us to keep looking. I think it's important for historians to keep search in archives to uncover some of these stories, because, you know, the ones that we have found are all fascinating. You know, we owe these women so much, but I still think there's a lot out there that we haven't yet found, but we have to keep searching for.
I discovered this part of history when I did an English literature degree late in my life in 2007, and I discovered feminism and suffragettes then. Now, is there a particular age or part of the population that you have to still try and convince of the importance of with the women's movement 100 years ago, as opposed to the very young men and women now who are literally, quite rightly, being exposed to this 100-year anniversary? I mean, do you think you have a struggle with a certain part of the population that won't or can't be changed in their views?
Everyone can be changed. Nobody is unchangeable. Everybody with an open mind allows thoughts to go in. They just have to be shown them. And the thing is, you know, a lot of these women have been invisible. Their stories have not been heard. I think you can't really be unmoved when you hear some of the things that women went through, so that we could have a really simple thing. It's not hard. Just a say in our futures, that's all.
As a broadcaster, Anita Arnold, speaking to Susie a little earlier on today, and you also heard Natasha Afor from Royal Mail about the significance of that stamp issue. As a former stamp collector, that looks quite good, and they do seem to bring out reasonable choices these days of postage stamps. The post office did go through a phase when they just sort of commercialised everything, really, and just brought out sets of stamps for the sake of stamp collectors. I know we don't quite use stamps as much as we used to, but pretty good still for us. It's 18 minutes away from 5.